Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. Tonight's Wednesday evening here in Central Kentucky for episode number 345. And tonight, joining me in the co-hosting seat is the one, the only, the lovely Holly Phillippe, who just checked in right before the show. She should be live. If not, we'll figure it out very quick. Holly. No, we can't hear you yet. So reset that, and we'll get you on there. Don't worry. We had Holly logged in right before the show there, and so we're getting ready to rock and roll with a great evening for you. We've got a absolutely superb guest coming up, which is going to be have a great conversation about the writing world. And, of course, as always, the convention that we are affiliated with, the Imaginarium Convention, we do have some great news to share with you from the last week. So that's good. I'm going to try to make sure that we get Holly on here. Let's see. She's working on getting reset on her mic right now. So, Holly, just join me whenever you can. Join me in progress there. I'm going to go ahead and start giving a couple updates here. Over the past week, we had a big announcement for Imaginarium. We had the announcement of our first Imaginator guest, who those of you that listen to the show already know him. Yes, Jeff Mudgett is coming as an Imaginator guest. And as we talked with you about on the show, he is the author of Bloodstains, which is the book that became the basis for the popular History Channel limited series, American Ripper. And the book and the series were accounts of Jeff's extensive investigation into his great-great-grandfather, Herman Webster Mudgett, better known to history by his alias H.H. Holmes, regarded as America's first serial killer. Of course, that investigation led to Jeff's theory, which he spoke of first in a big sense, 2015 TEDx talk, that H.H. Holmes could possibly be the same person as the infamous Jack the Ripper. So, yes, Jeff is coming, and he will be doing some great content. He's going to be giving a mock trial with over H.H. Holmes. He is going to also be giving a presentation on his Jack the Ripper series, and we've got Holly back here. Hopefully, I hear a little bit on the microphone. There you are. I hear you.
Can you help me?
You're live. Okay. You're live.
It was so wonky. The chat room's being wonky too because people are having trouble getting in. So I don't know, Blog Talk Radio, but you better straighten up.
Yes, refresh, folks. Yeah, it might take you a few times to refresh. Sometimes that is what is finicky. When it comes to the chat room, sometimes that, I don't know why it does that, but just go ahead and refresh the page a couple times, and hopefully you'll get logged in without any trouble. Holly and myself are in here right now, so, but yes, we wanted to give you the information about Jeff Mudgett being the Imaginator guest, our second, joining Dacre Stoker, and so that is good news. And then we also welcomed aboard several great panelists, a few of them we've had on the show, and one we are going to have tonight, as a matter of fact. So,
I do want to say something, though, before you go on. We will have updates next week about Dacre, too, and what he's going to be doing, because I've got a phone meeting with him tomorrow. I talked to him earlier, and we're going to be discussing some things that he's going to do. So, I'll have some neat news as far as Dacre Stoker next Wednesday.
There you have it, folks. Yeah, some very cutting edge, right to the minute updates. as a matter of fact. So that's good, Holly. Thank you. And that's awesome. So we'll be able to talk about some of the content with him, because I just mentioned about how Jeff's going to do a mock trial with H.H. Holmes, and he's also going to do a presentation
on
his theory.
We're going to hash that out the beginning of the year. And the audience, I was talking to him the other day, and the audience is going to be like the jury. So audience participation, mm-hmm. it's going to be really cool. And he wants me to do a live Star Chamber podcast during this too. So we'll see how it works out, but we may even do a live podcast so people can actually hear what's going on and can play it back.
Yes, we might have to get a co-host or two on that, because as you know, it's tough to run a convention as the convention organizers and also the same people that are co-hosts of the Star Chamber show.
I was hoping you'd co-host. Yeah.
So it's
Stephen, you can put out
tough.
The fire, but yeah, I would definitely need a co-host. I'm going to reach out to that old Tommy B. Smith. Tommy B. Smith.
Perfect. He would be dynamite for that, I think. And of course, lots of listeners are familiar with Tommy B. Smith already. So there you go. But yeah, we're chugging along with lots more great panelists. And so we had 7 new panelists announced for Imaginarium, and I would like to give you their names. They are Morgan Hazelwood, Aaron Christopher Drown, Molly Daniels, who also writes under the name Kenzie Michaels, who you might recognize from chat room and visiting in with the show here. And then we also have M.S. Nolan and Jessica Minyard and Michelle Gussow. And last but not least, I'm going to leave that one anonymous because I want to give our guest tonight a proper introduction. But the last of the panelists that's going to announce tonight is also our guest tonight. So we'll just leave that, leave you in a little suspense just for a few moments about that. But yeah, a slew of them. So yeah, lots of panelists, new programming, a new Imaginator guest, and the next few days are going to have quite a few new announcements that we already have in queue. So, it's moving. Yeah, I advise folks, we had some new vendors come aboard, both at Main Expo Hall and Karina's Alley. We've had several more banquet tickets that have sold. So, yeah, if you need any of that stuff, better to do it early than later, because those are all first come, first serve, and when they're gone, they're gone. So make sure you get that done. And don't forget, event ticket to Imaginarium makes for a great gift for someone for the holiday season, because you'll give them the gift of a experience, memories, and possibly new relationships that will go forward from there with the people that they meet, and plenty of content that will edify and help them grow as creatives. So, yeah, it's a great gift all around. So give that some thought for a present or stocking stuffer. So, and look at coming out back over chat room. Looks like Metalbeck is in there along with Sandy Linder. And yeah, so we're getting a little activity finally in the chat room. So any other updates that you have, Holly, before we give you the pair that brought you tonight's show?
Currently think of next week I will, but as for right now, no. We had family in over the weekend, so I've been a little preoccupied the past couple of days, but I will have some updates next week. We have the lovely grandchildren, the oldest grandchildren here, so that was fun. We did have a good couple of days. Their parents went to see Pentatonix at Rupp Arena, and we stayed here with the kids and played Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
Mario game, different things on the Switch, the Wii Switch. They always bring it because we smack talk and it's really fun. They enjoy it.
Yeah. Yes, Pentatonix show, and that was a big one. I think they had a crowd of about 11,000 in Rupp Arena, and from all the clips I saw, definitely a good time was had by all down there. So certainly Metalbeck was very pleased with the results and came back in a very happy mood from seeing the show. So that was awesome. So I'm very, very happy to see that happen. And, but yeah, we, we're juggling holidays along with the creative world and everything else. So yeah, because the work does not stop with the convention. Does not stop. It is so funny. And let's see here. Looking back in the chat room, just trying to catch up. See, do we have anything we need to relay from there, or can I go over to those that brought us tonight's show?
Go for it.
Okay. All right. Well, the two that brought you tonight's show are the amazing Sandy Lender, the Genre Blender, and then also bring you tonight's show, the lovely folks at Per Bostedt Publications. So tonight we're going to go first with a great spot from Sandy, and then we'll give you a little bit of information about Per Bostedt, and we encourage you to support both. Make both shopping destinations on your holiday gift list and get some folks some of their work, because, you can't go wrong with either Sandy's books or Per Bostedt's titles. Great publisher, and, just great, great stuff. So here we go. First, a little bit about Sandy.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender Blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay, but watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
Yes, a Lender Blender vampire satire, folks. Yeah, pick up a copy of that and everything else that Sandy has. That's great. Thank you, Sandy, so much. And now I'll give you a little bit about the fine folks at Per Bostedt. Per Bostedt Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostedt offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye, David Blaze, and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, a historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz, as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at PerBostedtPublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events. Per Bostedt Publications, where timeless tales unfold. But yes, Per Bostedt Publications, T. Lee Harris, Sarah Marion, and Marion Allen, the literary triumvirate, as I call them. Love them, and definitely I hope they have a great holiday season as well. So, coming back over to you, Holly, now that we've celebrated our those who have brought us tonight's show. And so, so we're getting ready for our call from our guest. And, it looks like, a very festive chat going on in the chat room. So, it's a fun one, it looks like.
There is some chat. We have an inside joke I'll let everybody in on. It's the Pelicans. Well, me and Steve and my daughters and the oldest grandkids, we all have this family chat group, and we're called the Pelicans. And it's hilarious. And we tease the oldest granddaughter that Steve keeps telling her he's going to buy her a pelican for Christmas. And she's like, I'm not going to feed it. And it gets hysterical because normally she's really quiet and everything, but she gets very, very talkative when it involves the pelican. But now we've made Sandy an honorary member, and she's like Nigel off of Nemo. And I was like, yes, like Nigel.
Well, when we actually get some, Sandy's going to be our consultant when we actually get some pelicans. So Sandy's already aboard for that. So.
You have to finish Nemo now. I tried to show you Nemo. We only got through half of it. You have to finish it because now you've got to meet Nigel.
Yes. Well, I've always considered Sandy one of our pelicans. Yeah, he's definitely part of the fam here. So so I see that, she's officially been made an honorary pelican tonight. So the silly and fun things that we enjoy. And that's great.
You have to, or the burnout will fry your brain. any creative knows. And this time of year, it's even more added stress for everyone.
Yes.
There is some cheer, and I mean, we do have fun, but it is stressful. And the past few years, let's face it, we've all had hardships, and it's been rough. And, you know, we've got inflation going on now, and it is hard, you know. And a lot of people, you know, especially with little children, are having it tough because, you know, Santa and all those different things. And it's rough this time of year. So I encourage you, if you have the money, don't stretch yourself and put yourself in the poorhouse. But if you have a few extra dollars, get an angel tree. Go to Walmart, pick one of those little angels off the angel tree. Get them some gifts this year to help mom and dad, you know, or the single parent, or, you know, people that are struggling, you know. Just
yes.
Pass on some cheer, you know?
Absolutely.
If you can. Yeah, pay it forward, as they say.
Well, I'm going to bring you some good cheer. Our guest is in queue and looks like ready
yeah.
to go. So yes, and our guest, as I said, is the last of the panelist announcements that we had for tonight for Imaginarium. And so tonight's guest is an author and historian. He writes in the fantasy genre and also is a freelancer and content creator, writing everything from flash fiction and low-content books to full-length novels, and even has a master's thesis on Henry IV of England. So I know that already intrigues Holly with her love of England and England's history. So for the very first time, I am very proud and honored to bring aboard as a guest on the Star Chamber show, P.L. Riven. Hello, your mic should be on.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good, and great to catch up with you, and looking forward to speaking with you tonight about everything. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, yes, thank you for asking me. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, absolutely. And so for the listeners.
Go ahead. I apologize for not getting back to you like right away yesterday, but you know, usually I check my LinkedIn like every day. But yeah, we had the oldest grandkids, and it was just chaos here
absolutely.
For a couple of days, but it was so much fun, you know, seeing the
absolutely.
Grandkids.
Yeah. Like I said, kids come first always. I totally get it. I have two. No worries.
Well, you understand that.
100%,
so, yeah, when I got back to hold it, I was like, you know, she understands.
Yeah, I just want to make sure nothing fell through the cracks, so... I am very excited to be here, and I am looking forward to chatting with y'all.
Well, let me tell you, we are definitely on point, though, with that with the kids being here this past weekend, because we actually ended up watching the movie Krampus on the actual Krampus night day. So
yes!
We actually watched.
Very
I'm not joking. So we're up
it
to speed on that at least.
Krampus night.
Yes.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And thankfully, Krampus did not pay a visit to any of the kids in the house, so they have definitely been good. So we're okay.
Fantastic.
But for the listeners out there that are hearing from you for the first time tonight, I just wanted to give you a chance to give your own introduction about the type of writing and work that you do, so you can kind of give us a little overview, and then we'll get into everything in a little more detail.
Sure. So I have been writing for ever and a year. I originally wanted to be an author when I was in sixth grade. I wrote my first novel at 18, took a break, went to school, and wanted to go for history. At that point, I wanted to get a PhD in history. Things kind of moved around a little bit. I got married. I had kids. Ended up going back for a master's degree in history later. Decided to not go for the PhD, at which point when my daughter was born, she was my second child, decided I kind of wanted to get back into writing. I felt like I was sitting around not really getting a lot done. I was finishing up with school. And I started listening and writing again, and I found my passion for the craft. And instead, originally I was writing more of like Jane Austen type of things. The very first thing I wrote was a Georgian romp. It was basically like a soap opera, 18 threw everything in the kitchen sink at it. It was ridiculous, but it was a lot of fun. And when I realized that I didn't necessarily want to write that, I started looking for something that I was passionate about. My dad, he is an avid science fiction and fantasy reader, and he finally coerced me into trying the Dresden Files. And I read it, and I loved it, and I realized everything I wanted to write was urban fantasy, which is actually what I do now. I started my current work in progress. It took me, like, gosh, since 2018. I came up with the idea during a nano. Through that, out the door, didn't keep the story. But I have since written a new story. I'm in a second draft. I have an editor in Northern Ireland who's going to be reading it. Nano is a brand new series, which is a true, gritty, urban fantasy novel that I am pretty excited about. I'm about halfway through that one. Oh, and then I do have the thesis as well that I have also published.
Thesis is definitely, that perks my interest because I'm huge on England and the history of England and the royal family. I even named my daughter after Princess Diana.
My daughter was born on Princess Charlotte's birthday. They were born within 53 minutes of each other.
Really?
Yes. I was so excited. My sister-in-law sent me a text. She's like, you realize Kate had the baby and she had a girl. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, they were like 53 minutes apart. It was the craziest thing.
That is so cool. That's awesome. So you'll never forget her birthday.
Never. She's always very excited. Anytime they announce how old Princess Charlotte is, she's like, that's how old I am.
That's right. You're only a few minutes apart. That is so cool. Man, that made me tear up. That is so cool. Yeah, I've been first grade when, like, Diana got married, right? And my mom let me stay home from school. We had to get up at 3 a.m. to watch the wedding and the whole thing. And, you know, I followed her life and my goal, you know, because I looked up to her so much for all the humanitarian work she did, and she actually cared. It wasn't just a walkabout to her, even if she actually had passion, cared about people. And I always said, I was like, well, if I ever have a girl, because I had three boys, I didn't think I was ever having a girl. But I finally did. Yeah. And I always said, well, she's going to be named after Diana. So I named her Diana Frances. So, yes, that's...
Oh, how lovely. Oh, I love it.
So
I love that.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just think that's wonderful. I just love that. I love the royal family, and I love England, and I'm always excited to hear somebody else that's passionate about that.
Yes. I'm all in.
Yeah.
I want to hear what inspired you to actually pick that particular Henry. Because, you know, Henry VIII was, you know, the whole, you know, cuckoo.
Yeah.
We went cuckoo duck.
Absolutely.
So what actually drew you to, So what actually drew you to do Henry, wasn't it the fourth that you did?
The fourth.
Henry the fourth.
Yes. What inspired you to do him?
Well, it's kind of funny. I had always intended to write either Anne Boleyn or Catherine of Aragon, or not even really Henry, but potentially Henry the Eighth. When I was going through school, they didn't necessarily have an expert in Tudor, you know, history. I was drawn to who happened to be the chair of my department at the time. And he is one of the very few, like, I mean, there's like four in the entire world, scholars on Henry the Fourth of England. And you always have to say the Fourth of England because everyone assumes you mean of France. With his tutelage, he's like, you should check out Henry. Now, when I signed up to do Henry, I did not realize that there was, like, basically no scholarship at. So I really set myself up for quite a battle to actually finish that project. But when I did, It was pretty special because there are not very many people out there that are, you know, Henry VIII scholars of any level, which I felt was kind of a fun club to be a part of. And I was lucky enough that I had written a chapter in my thesis about Henry and superstition and his illness and how, you know, the people thought at that point that if you were sick, that you must have done something morally wrong. Considering the fact that Henry IV usurped his throne, they figured,
right,
hey, this is why this guy is pretty, you know, pretty much has like leprosy or whatever. They weren't even really sure what it was.
Right.
And mm-hmm. when I presented it, one of the advisors on the board asked if he could actually teach it in one of his classes. He was a scholar on medical history. So, of course, I was like, yes, that would be unbelievable. I would be so honored. Yes, please sign me up. So, he did teach it during at least one of his semesters at UNK and to the undergraduates, which was pretty cool. So I didn't necessarily intend to do Henry IV, but it kind of fell into my lap, and I, in the end, was very happy I did it.
Well, I think it's great that you picked it.
That it's actually being taught to med students. I mean, that's a whole other, ball game.
Undergraduate.
You wouldn't even expect the net. So, yeah, that was like a curveball. So that was really neat.
I actually think it's great that she picked a topic or a king that's not just one of the usual very popular well-known ones too. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
awesome that you
mm-hmm.
that you highlighted, you know, one that's not as well known about. So that's a because I have been to England. Yeah, I have been to England and loved my trip. I went there with my mother and sister before my mom had passed, just a few years before she passed. And I have great memories, even walking around the base of Caernarfon Castle in Wales. So, yeah, I had quite an excursion over there. But I've had I definitely love the history of the kings of England and definitely find it fascinating. So I might actually have to read your thesis. That sounds really good. I'm a history
Thank
geek.
You.
I love it.
Oh, me too. Yes, I love it. Yes.
But, yeah,
so
history
is there
seems
a place
to be.
Where we can go, I was going to say, is there a place we can actually go to read the thesis?
It is actually, last time I looked, they were selling it on one of these thesis websites. The name of the website escapes me. If I can figure out what it is, I'll shoot it to you, or I'll just, you know, send you a copy. No big deal. It's not that great, but I'd be happy to send it along, and y'all can learn a little bit about crazy Henry IV, who was quite crazy in himself. I mean, I think
mm-hmm.
it's something about that name, Henry, you know, except for, of course, his son, Henry V, was considered, you know, one of the best kings of England of all time. And Shakespeare did decide to write not one, but two plays about him. So, I mean, that's a feather in his cap, if nothing else.
Yeah.
True.
That's true. So, but I noticed, I mean, that's one thing that I noticed right out when I was reading your bio for the first time is that, yeah, you have a passion for history, and then you also had a father who is a speculative fiction fan, and that rang a lot of bells because my parents were both had a love for history and were always reading historical books and
uh-huh.
things like that, whether fiction, nonfiction, and they both
right.
were fans of speculative fiction. My mom read me Lord of the Rings when I was seven, and then she gave me the Chronicles of Narnia. That set me on my own writing path and journey. So I felt so that we had some common ground there with the kind of the two mutual dynamics going. But I'd like for you to talk about the influence that your dad had, because that's something I can relate a lot to. But in your kind of gaining that love for reading and writing spec fic.
Sure. So my dad is an ER doctor, and he, you know, sees a lot of stuff. So I think an escapism for him, obviously, is to go and read a bunch of fantasy and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I haven't done so much to sci-fi. I like the movies. I'm not so much into the reading of it. But he introduced me to the drugs. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just said right.
Yes?
I agree with you. I'm the same.
Oh, yeah,
one.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, so he had been pushing me for years and years and years to read the Dresden Files, giving me the books, and I kept thanking him and putting them back on the shelf. Eventually, I decided to go ahead and give it a shot, and when I read it, it really spoke to me. I think it's the kind of the grittiness, but also I love that the cities are so integral into and this, you know, the urban fantasy setting. One of the things that I love to do is write characters. It's my favorite thing to do in the whole wide world. I always hated writing settings. And because of that, I tended to put my characters in these white boxes. I saw them in a room. I thought it was beautiful, or I talk about the drapes to ad nauseum, but I never actually put them somewhere. And when I realized that the setting is the character in urban fantasy, it really drew me to it. And I think part of that is because I do love history. The current work I'm working on right now is set in Philadelphia. It's an alternate Philadelphia, but I do use the history. I reference the buildings. I talk about interesting people that lived there and drop it in, not as window dressing because it's important, but it does give me an opportunity to kind of nerd out in history, and I think that's why I want to write the fantasy as much as I do.
Yes, and you talked about escapism, and I could understand that. I didn't realize your father was an ER doctor, but I worked as a nurse for over 2 decades.
Okay.
So, yeah, I definitely relate. You know, you see some things that, you know, normal people would be like, you know, I can't, I don't know how to do that, you know, because we just, you know, have a switch we turn off. You have to help people.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what's going on. You help the person, you know, so we don't think about the blood and the grossness and all. You just, it's helping the patient. And
absolutely.
So it is great to be able to, it's great to be able to pick up a book, get lost in it, and, you know, go somewhere else for a while. It gives a mental break. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
I think was very similar, and my mom, because they were both scientists. My dad was a cancer researcher, and my mother was a lab technician. He was a PhD, and then she was a lab technician, so she would, like, conduct the protocols and run things in labs, and that, you know, it's kind of gives you a little idea on how they met, but they both, I think that escapism factor worked for them too, because that, you know, the fantasy realms and spec fic and all got to give them a way to escape from, you know, that kind of world too. So I think you illustrated that well. But, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I just want to add that little note.
Oh, I was going to say I'm an only child, so very, very close to my parents. They literally live a mile from my husband and my children and I. They're super, super close. So my dad's, I mean, you're talking about, you know, being a doctor and being a nurse and you kind of have to turn things off. You also have to laugh. So I have been cursed and blessed with a very unusual sense of humor and a very unusual twist and view of things that can be somewhat noir. And I think that I'm really enjoying that, which is something I could not do when I am having my characters run through the fields and take off hats as being the most important thing they could possibly do in Georgian society. Now I'm able to, you know, use all kinds of crazy guns and, you know, magic and, you know, spells. And it's just, it's a totally different world that I really feel like if I had stayed down the historic fiction route, I probably wouldn't be writing right now.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I understand. Yeah. That's awesome. And, yeah, that's, It is fun to be able to kind of set your own rules too. And I know that, now that you're in this, that writing in this area, I know that you are probably knee deep in world building, and with your love of history, you're wanting to kind of bring that kind of breadth and depth to the world building of your own work, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. I find that I work better with parameters. I'm definitely a person. I get up super early in the morning, so I do have a lot of extra time in the morning to focus on things. But I do like to have the parameters set for myself. And I think when I set them in my own world, it's interesting to see how you can break your rules without actually breaking the system, which is something that you can't really do when you have to historically stay accurate to, 14th century France, or, a historic figure that is integral in a fight or a battle that needs to die. It is kind of fun to make up your own stuff. Since I've spent so much time in academia where, making things up will probably get you in trouble and will definitely get you some bad grades.
That little range that you get, when you write one of those projects. But I do want to nudge a little bit though, because you'd mentioned it earlier that you have completed Nano several times, and I think you said that you've actually done Nano since 2018. Is that correct? Like every year, or did I read that wrong? Oh, I think we lost your Holly. Holly?
Oh, no.
Call back. Yeah, I think it looks like the call dropped. Well, hold that thought. She got so excited. Here we go. There. She's back.
Yeah.
No worries.
Sorry about
it
that.
Happens. Believe me, it happens more than you think. At least be glad. Be glad that you're not Bridget Nelson, because she had to endure a transformer exploding in our court the night that she was a guest the first time.
Oh, gosh.
It could
get worse. Yes,
so.
I blame Apple. It was my AirPods. Like, they were saying they're connected, and I'm like, yeah, you're not connected. I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, oh, no. So
well,
it's technology's fault.
Live,
I blame it.
That's the thing about live podcasts. You never know. It's always exciting because you never know what you're getting into. But did you hear Steve's question?
I'm sorry, I did not. No. Would you mind repeating?
Okay, I'll be glad to. You mentioned earlier in the discussion you referenced that you had just been doing Nano, and I had seen in your bio that you have done it since I believe 2018. You've generated quite a bit of material during these Novembers, and this one just concluded. That's awesome. You must have a nice stack of material from each year from this period.
Yeah, so it's a funny thing. 2018, I decided to do Nano. I swear it was like a day before. I didn't really understand that you need to prepare for it. I was very wet behind the ears at this point. So I remember that morning I was doing yoga and I did not have a story. And I'm sitting there thinking, how in the world am I going to write 1,666 words with literally no story? And out of the corner of my eye, I just had this character. He was just sitting there on a stool, and he came with a name, and he was a cowboy, and I'm like, please don't be a cowboy. I don't know anything about that. How about you're a doctor or a lawyer or anything but a cowboy? And he walked in, and I ended up writing the whole story about him. The story was garbage. It went nowhere because I had no preparation. So I did put it aside. I wrote some other things for some other Nanos because I have won all the Nanos, I'm very proud to say. I've tried them every year, and I have won to this point. So fingers crossed for next year. But
nice.
Very well.
I did end up taking his story, that character, putting him in a brand new story, and ran with it. And that's the one that's sitting in its second draft form right now. This Nano, I decided that I did not care if I hit 50,000 words. I decided I was going to finish with at least a partial first draft. I tend to write between 94,000 and 100-ish thousand words. So there was no way I was going to finish the actual novel. But I know it's quote unquote cheating to not have 50,000 words. I did have 50,000 words by like 102 or something, but in the end I had enough word count, but I did not go with that intent. I didn't really care about quote unquote winning. I cared about walking away with something that was usable, that was not vomit, that I was proud of, that was in the first draft form that I could give to an editor. And it was not going, he wasn't going to come to me and say, Megan, I cut 10,000 words of Vary. And that's just not me. I very high standards for myself, so I'm sure I deleted way more words than I should have because I was editing while I was writing. But the wonderful thing about Nano is that it gets you in the habit, and I really believe that's what the win is.
Mm-hmm. No,
well,
I think that's
what I was going to ask. Do you feel that – I know you've done it for so long. Obviously, you feel that it's a good part of your process. But as
Absolutely.
Far as recommending it to people – mm-hmm. That's what I was wondering. How, you know, why would you recommend it to people? Do you think it gives them a push to actually sit
okay.
down and take the time to write, whether you publish it or not? Or
right.
you know, what is your take there? Why do you do it? Do you do it to get something to publish, or do you do it
mm-hmm.
because it makes you sit down, it makes you go through the process and
mm-hmm.
write like every day?
Yeah.
To call
Yeah. So I encourage all of my writing friends to participate in Nano. I definitely adhere to the if you wrote 10 words that are good, those are 10 words you probably wouldn't have written anyway philosophy. I do think that it sets a really good habit for writing. I think it's Stephen King writes like 2,000 words a day, but it's with regularity. And you can always go back and edit, and everyone says, oh, you can't edit a blank page, but you also, you can't really get into the rhythm of being a writer unless you're writing. And it's not just writing anything. If you hit a stumbling block, put on a Netflix show, listen to somebody else's book, you know, better yet, you know, read somebody else's book, it will spark it. But for me, Nano is a community building thing, first of all, and the writing community, as you know, is just really, you know, embraces everyone, and it's such a great, you know, place to be to begin with, I believe. And I think that Nano gives you the push. It definitely does. I think goals are super important in this. So I do believe in Nano. I will do it every year. It won't matter you know, whether I need to write a book to publish or not. I don't worry so much about the publishing. I worry more about the process and staying sharp, because I went from pushing myself to write 500 to 800 words a day to knocking out 3,200 word chapters, which
wow.
I did like 2 days ago in one day. And it was actually not even a day. It was like in 3 hours. And I absolutely
mm-hmm.
attribute it to my Nano.
See,
yeah.
I just don't know. Like I said, I told the chat room, unless, like, my ADHD was treated, I don't know if I could do that. Stephen
yeah.
does it on a regular day. I mean, Stephen gets up every
mm-hmm.
morning. That's the first thing
yeah.
he does. He goes, and that's the first thing he does. He goes into the writing room. He writes for
mm-hmm.
a few hours. He does
yeah.
that. It. You know, after you do something every day for so long of a period, it becomes a habit, and that's just what he does.
Right.
But me,
yeah.
I'm more creative at night. You know, I am
mm-hmm.
a night owl,
yep.
Definitely a night owl. So that's when my brain is actually, you know, fully functioning and
mm-hmm.
creative juices are flowing.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility I may try it next year or in the future, because then it would make me more disciplined. See, that's what I need is
yeah.
discipline, because if I have a date, and you know, and it says I have to do this many words per day.
Yeah.
I have to do it by this
mm-hmm.
day. I have to. Yeah, it makes you more disciplined and more apt
it
to
does.
Do it. So, yeah,
I totally
I
agree. And I think a lot of it though is the approach. This time,
yeah.
I swear it was like until like day. Gosh, it must have been the 26th. I was behind every single day. And anybody that knows me, I'm not behind on anything. I get up at 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the morning every morning. And
wow.
I am super diligent about everything, like punctuality. That's why, like, dropping the call, like, I died a little bit. I probably lost like 2 minutes of my life losing my call with y'all. So, you know, it was a really big deal that I was behind. but I didn't allow myself to be upset about that. So I really went into this nano, and I guess I would suggest to anybody that's worried about what do I do, how am I going to manage it, what if I can't make the words, who cares? It doesn't matter. I mean, whether you quote-unquote – I mean, I don't even like the term win. I don't think anybody is winning anything other than whether or not they are attaining their own goals. It used to be you couldn't even start – or you couldn't even work on an old project. You had to start a brand new one, and I hated that. I felt like that was not really in the spirit of what Nano was supposed to be. So when they changed the rules, I thought that was cool. But anyone that comes, and I do have people and my friends are like, there's no way I could possibly write that many words. I'm like, what difference does that make? You know, you set something that's attainable to you, maybe a little bit more than attainable, so you have something to reach for. But, you know, this is definitely an individual process. And, you know, everyone's there to support you in it. But I think that you would probably really enjoy it. And it's not necessarily about hitting that 50,000 words. I know there are people that really care about it. The very first nano, the first nano in 2018 when I had no direction and everything was literally vomit, I finished that with over 2 weeks. You know, I was so freaking proud of myself. Wow. Look at how many words I wrote. But I walked away the rest of the month going, yeah, except everything here is garbage. What am I going to do with it? I'll never do it again because, you know, I didn't walk away. I can't publish it. I believe it was Maze Runner, I believe, is a nano project that was published.
Really?
And,
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know
yeah,
that
I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe it's Maze Runner. But now that I've gotten some distance, 2018 was quite a long time ago, I realize that even if it was a nano, there's no way that that was publishable at the end of nano. That was just, and I think a lot of people look at it this way, as a very deep outline. And if you have the deep outline, then you can take it and make it better and edit it. And that's, you know, what you should be trying to publish. But I really do try to write without the idea of, is this publishable? And I write where the story takes me. I write what makes me feel good and what I want to read. And I think that's probably the best way to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always said, I've never done nano, like Holly mentioned, but the one thing that I do see in it, especially for new writers, is it disciplines them to sit at the keyboard on a regular basis, on a daily, near daily basis. And to me, that's the
absolutely.
Key, not the word count. It's the sitting and treating it like work, you know, in a way. I mean, like you set aside time for it. It's on top of your priority list. You do it. And that's
absolutely.
How you end up learning how to finish projects, because I hear so many writers say, I just can't finish a project. Well, nano, that's one good thing I think it does. It helps writers get into that kind of rhythm where, you know, it disciplines you to finish a project. And that's
absolutely
that's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think a lot of writers also, you know, writing is not their day job. Writing is their hobby. Writing is their passion. Writing is what they're hoping to attain. And it's kind of easy to put that off. You know, I need to get up early. I need to be at a meeting. I have to get my kids to school. I mean, but in November, they're like, you know, you got to do it in November. I wish it wasn't November. My anniversary is November, my son's birthday, my birthday, my parents' anniversary, which we actually share, my husband and I, with my parents. So we have like 7 things going on in November, and I'm smacking my head against the wall like, why?
Yeah,
I'm like, can't we just pick any other month? How about October? There's an extra day in October. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's about discipline, and I think that when you boil it down, I think you're completely right. I think that nano is about attaining your own goal as well as learning the discipline, because once you have the discipline, everything else tends to fall in place.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I do want to pass
especially
on some fun from the chat room. It looks like Amy McCorkle, author and filmmaker, said that Water for Elephants is a nano novel.
Yeah.
So how about that?
Mm,
that,
yes.
I didn't know that either. That's cool.
Yes.
Right, Holly.
Amy's actually been doing it since, like, I think she said 2003. I'm looking back in the – yes, 2003.
Whew.
Yeah. And,
that is impressive.
And she's – chugged right along, you know. She's got a film on Amazon now and everything. So, yeah, she's chugging. So,
yeah,
she swears by it, especially for people that aren't disciplined like me. You know, it does put me in a box and, like, you know, says, hey, you got to get it done. It was the same way in school. You know, I'd wait till, like, the last minute. Even in nursing school, I'd wait till the last 8 minutes to get my paper right, you know, and then, you know, I'd still get a good grade on it, but I'd wait till the last moment, procrastinator, you know, and so Nano might whip me into shape.
Oh, yeah, and start your own. I think you should have a mini Nano. I think you should have, like, a two-week Nano where you cut it and you're trying to reach maybe half your goal or, like, 20,000 or 10,000 words. Try it out on your own without the pressure of everybody saying, hey, how many words do you have today? Because you go to Instagram and it's like, ooh, look, you know, look at my word count. And you're going, yeah, my word count's behind. And it's, you know, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think that's
true.
A good idea. All right, Holly, you got your challenge now.
There's your challenge.
I do. I will finally, you know, be disciplined. For once, maybe. I don't know.
I think Holly could do it. Knowing Holly like I do, I think Holly could do it. I absolutely believe it. So I know Holly
could do it. It's just a matter of if I do it. That's the fact. I have so many irons in the fire, you know, and then my brain, Stephen works. He concentrates on one thing at a time. I'm doing 10. And that's how my brain works.
Me too.
And that's how I function.
I get that.
I multitask. I've got like three. Especially when it gets closer to Imaginarium, Steve can vouch.
Mm-hmm.
I have three computers going. I have a laptop, two desks. I have three screens going because I do the programming, right? I schedule everything. So I'm sitting there and I'm doing all this, three screens. I'm answering emails. I'm doing programming. Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, all this stuff. I have, you know, umpteen things going at once. Plus I got my phone going. And sometimes I even bring my Kindle in there. I've got another. I got a tablet. So, yeah, it's insane. But that's how my brain works, you know, and that's how I function. But to get zeroed in a discipline, because I've had this children's series in my brain for umpteen years. I started on it, but I never go back to it. But I've got it mapped out. I've got it plotted in my brain. It's just being disciplined enough to sit and do it, you know, with everything else going on. Right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think DL has the best idea, mini Nano. I think it's awesome, and it looks like Amy McCorkle has already volunteered to participate with you, Holly, so you already have somebody to partner with you on it.
Definitely. Amy, I think we're going to run with your idea, PL. I really do.
Yes.
The mini Nano thing would be really cool to do like an Instagram, you know, even a – so maybe I can get like a mini Nano project going for like spring when there isn't as much going on. You know, and it's not near the holidays and all that. I think that'd be a fabulous idea because people are getting happy. Your endorphins are pumping because springs are coming, the sunshine, the warm air. You're getting out of winter. You know, I think it'd be a perfect time to do a mini Nano.
Well, I will join you. If you decide to do it, let me know I am in.
Nice.
All right.
A movement has begun.
There we go.
Challenge accepted.
I am so
awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic. And but in addition to the longer form writing, like, you know, like novels and doing something like Nano, you also are very involved on the other end of the spectrum, because I saw that you also are an award winner in the area of flash fiction, and that is also a part of your bio. So you run the whole gamut of types of writing, and I'd love for you just to comment a little bit on your flash fiction writing, because that's a whole another ball game there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I believe it was in 2016. I decided to join a flash fiction contest. I didn't even know what flash fiction was. I signed up. My grandfather always said, if somebody asks you if you can do something, you say, absolutely. You smile, you shake their hand, and then you go learn it. So this is what I decided to do. Sure, I can compete in the flash fiction contest. I had no idea. I didn't even know how many words it was. So I buckled down and I learned how to do it. I jumped into it. The very first thing they gave me, you know, it was a competition where they would give you three objects and they would give you a genre. And you had a weekend to write 1,000-word flash fiction. And I said to my husband, I can do anything as long as they don't give me horror. I'll give you two guesses, three guesses, and the first two don't count. Which genre I got? Horror. Had no idea. It was horror, and it was, I believe it was a cooler and a ship and a heart that I had to include in this story. And I said, there's no way I'm going to even place. They're not going to ask me to continue. I'm going to get kicked out of it because you were eliminated as you went along. And I wrote it. And it ended up being a flash fiction that I called Reap What You Sow. And it was macabre, and it was urban fantasy, which I didn't even realize that I wrote at that point. I just thought I wrote fantasy. And sure enough, I'm looking at this sheet of all these names that weren't even real names because everybody's was anonymous. And I go and I find my little code, and I'm looking at starting at the bottom, going, yeah, okay, well, now I'm moving my way up and moving my way up, and lo and behold, I get to like the top 10. And I start getting a little excited. I also start getting a little bit nervous. I'm like, maybe I'm on the wrong page. So I keep going. Sure enough, right there at the very top, I won that category in horror. It was the craziest thing. I was not expecting that at all. It did give me a little bit of boost, like, you know, maybe it isn't total garbage and maybe I can really do this. So I did end up writing some other flash fiction. It's actually on my website, which just launched, by the way. I believe yesterday, plriven.com. My husband was kind enough. He's a programmer. He's a director of engineering. He was kind enough to write this website and give it to me for my birthday. So a little shout out to him. Thank you very much.
Well, happy
Thank
birthday.
You. Thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I have put that up there. I've also written some poems. I accidentally published a poem back in, I believe it was 2006 or maybe 2007. I'd written it for one of my classes in school, and I threw it in something that I didn't really even know was a contest. Next thing I know, they published it. So that was my first accidental publishing credit.
Well, nice.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Add that feather to the cap, you know.
That's
amazing.
It. Just bring, yeah, yeah. Mark it down and, you know, move on, which, you know, got to keep trucking.
Well, the last 2 days have been a flurry because you had the podcast, you got announced as a guest for Imaginarium, you got a new website, and you got a birthday. So it's been a very active couple of days.
Yes, it has been very, very eventful. Yes, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
So where do you see going from now? I mean, are you going to try to step outside the box again? Maybe trying horror, maybe try. See, we always encourage people because people do tend to get stuck. You know, they want to get stuck in one genre, but it's always good to step outside the box and, you know, get your feet wet. Get, you know, yeah.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I write in urban fantasy, but I definitely do cross genres. What I'm writing right now is an urban fantasy, but inside it, I realized I need to write a mystery, an old-fashioned Agatha Christie-esque mystery that goes inside of this story, the problem being I've never written one. So I have put on my scholarly hat and gotten my books, and I am figuring out how to weave it in. And I see that that's probably how I'll continue moving forward, especially with the series. I mean, you end up with a genre, but each of those books is going to have a subgenre. So this one will be a mystery. Next time it might be a horror. And then one after that might be a thriller. So I think it's those subgenres that you can really tap into and start crossing over in ways that you can stay comfortable in what you know and branch out. And I think that is how I see my career moving.
Well, you actually have touched on one of the main reasons that I envisioned Imaginarium when it was founded to be an all-genre writing convention. And that mm-hmm. is the reason, because in all types of stories, you still have elements of other genres. There will always be, like in a horror novel, there will be elements of mystery and thriller, elements of possibly science fiction or something like that. If you're doing a even a mystery, you're going to have, you know, very subtly, but you might have an element of horror or something like that kind of woven into it in a very subtle way. So you're always using elements of other genres in the writing of a main genre. So there's always mm-hmm. something you can learn from a writer whose main focus is a certain genre. So talking to, you know, not, you know, so the fantasy author always going to has something to learn from a mystery author and vice versa. I think you just gave us a perfect example of that, and that's exactly why we want all writers under one umbrella, because for that reason. Because I mean, yeah, it's true. It's yeah, the more you draw upon elements of other genres, the I think the richer your storytelling is going to be.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I feel like all you have to do is look at Hansel and Gretel. I mean, putting this old witch uh-huh. in an oven, maybe she deserved it, I don't know. But that's pretty dark, you know, and this is for uh-huh. children. And there, yeah. you can weave in that horror into little children's fairy tales. I think we can weave it everywhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, you read the Brothers Grimm, the original. There it is. Oh,
yeah.
It's dark. It's dark.
Cinderella, they're cutting off their feet. They're like, oh, my foot doesn't fit uh-huh. in this slipper. They're not squeezing them and having their toes break out. They're just cutting them off. It is stuff that I'm like, yeah, I tell my kids, you don't really want to do that. Let's just stick with Disney, you know, the watered-down version. It is. That stuff is dark.
It is. Yeah, people are surprised when they revisit. They think because it's older, that's not going to be mm-hmm. as crazy and wild as it is.
Oh
yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, you're forgetting. Yeah, I mean, people don't, I think, understand the cultures that these are coming from. These are very like mm-hmm. strong and violent and cultures. So mm-hmm. I mean, they had to raise their kids. I mean, you look at Sparta; they pulled their 7-year-olds out and they sent them to basically sent all the boys away, and mm-hmm. they weren't being pampered and taken pictures of and, you know, going to prom at 17. They were men.
No.
You know, knowing the history, you know just how dark that can get.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
true.
Most definitely.
That's very true.
Yeah.
So do you ever see yourself going back to the, because I know the history buff is still in there. It's lingering there, even if you're writing fantasy. But do you ever think you'll go back to like doing a historical like fiction or historical romance? Do you think you'll ever do that?
I will. I actually I have a novel that I have the beginning and I have the end. They are solid, 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 and it is definitely a speculative fiction, secondary world, fantasy, but it is also kind of like, and everyone cringes because Dan Brown makes everyone cringe because of his writing, but his storytelling is great. It is definitely in there. It is about a mystery that comes about from a museum, and it has all of the history that I love. Not all, they go to Egypt. We're not talking about the pyramids. We're talking about the whole of the top of the Sphinx, or Edgar Casey with the Hall of Records underneath the paw of the Sphinx. The cool things that people don't talk about, and I know I'm going to go back and finish that novel, and that will be just riddled with history that's mixed with myth, that's mixed with things that I have created in a way, and I want it to be that nobody actually knows what's true and what's not true. And that's something I still do, even with my urban fantasy. I was referencing an old ad for a cigarette company that nobody probably even remembers from the 60s, where they were excited about it because they said their cigarette was the best because it had carbon in it. So they had taken, unfortunately, dark and carbon color and put it under somebody's eye like they had been punched. And this was their entire marketing strategy. And I just dropped it in there in my book. And I promise you, if anybody ever reads that, that company is going to suddenly like have to fix their website because it's going to break it. No one's going to believe that it's real.
Awesome.
Right. Well, I do have a question. What is your, like, writing kryptonite? What really gets the juices flowing and you're going to sit down and, you know, bang out 5,000 words?
That's a really good question. You know, it always hits at the worst time. I think I mentioned I get up really early in the morning. One of the things I do is I'm basically Danny Tanner. Like, I'm constantly cleaning our house. It drives me crazy if it's not neat and tidy. So I throw in my earbuds and I'm listening to other people's books. And I swear every single time I'm in the middle of washing dishes or something, vacuuming, and I'm listening to this book, something will spark just an idea. And usually it's completely unrelated to what I'm listening to or what I'm reading or what I'm doing. And I have to sit down and I bang it out. On a keyboard, it was for a while. I was writing exclusively on my cell phone, which is what I did during Nano. I wrote on my cell phone in the app, in the Notes app, and I thought I was so fast. Oh, look how many words I've written. No, I'm really slow. If I can get in front of a computer and have some quiet and focus, that's when I'm fast. So I get a spark. I drop whatever I'm doing. I go hide in a closet so my kids can't find me. And I type out the entire scene. And then I put it down and I'll come back to it and fix it later. So I would say that the thing that sparks me the most is definitely other writers.
Mm-hmm.
It's reading other stuff. Because I've always believed that you have to read at least twice what you're writing to be successful.
Yep.
I think it's probably more than twice. I would argue it might be four times as much. Because you just gain so much.
To be a successful writer.
Thank you.
To be a successful writer, you have to be a reader. You have to be a reader.
First. You've got to be a reader first.
You know, and we have so many authors tell us, I don't have time to read it. Well, then you never.
Constantly. I hear it all the time.
Really?
All
you
the
wouldn't
time.
Believe it.
Do you?
You wouldn't believe it. Yeah, all the time.
I
want to thank you for what you just said, because writers need to hear that. They need to hear that.
Me and Steve, about every room of our house, there's books. There's books piled up everywhere. We have our whole downstairs living room. Our entire wall is a library. And then upstairs, like almost every room, there's books of some sort. There's books. I don't care what, even in our bedroom, he's got his books piled over here. I got my Tariq pal over here and pals on my dresser. He's got pals, you know, because we'll read a few things at a time. But yes, to be the writer, you have to read, and you have to read outside your genre. Yes, you have your favorite genre.
Always.
But
you
have to read outside your genres just to get a perspective.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you got to stay in your genre so that you make sure that you hit the tropes, that you hit reader expectations. It's super important.
Yep.
But you have to read outside your genre. And one of the other things I love to do, if I don't know what I'm writing or, you know, I want to do something with my husband, I'm like, let's find a Netflix series and let's binge it. So I'll also watch reality television. It is in my guilty pleasure. I love The Bachelor. I love all of those dating shows. not just because of the drama, because I think the drama is funny. I don't want the drama personally in my life, but they can have it on TV. That's fine. But I have gained such an insight into different personality types and different motivations and things that somebody will say, or they'll, you know, just interactions between people, you can learn so much. People watching. That was what my grandfather used to do. He'd sit in the mall. We'd go shopping. He would people watch for hours, and he'd come back with these wonderful stories. And I think that everything is out there that's ripe for the picking if you were willing to do it. And I think there are so many people, and it's not just writers. I think it's many, especially artists, would really like to do the stuff, and they're good at it, but they don't want to branch out into something that's uncomfortable. And it might be uncomfortable to, you know, watch a show that you wouldn't normally watch or read a political speech that you don't agree with. But you really do gain so much from that. And that is definitely muse sparking. I was actually reading Ray Bradbury. So I'm reading his Zen on Something Writing. It's like his big famous book, and the title is escaping me right now. And I just read his chapter on muses, and that's what he suggests. He said, you have to feed the muse. You feed your body, you have to feed the muse. And the way you feed the muse is by diverse, unique experiences in your life. Read different things, talk to different people, have different experiences, eat food that you don't like, go to a country where you don't speak the language, because that is what feeds your muse. And when your muse is fed, she's a lot more likely to show up. Then you just have to actually take her dictation and try to keep up.
Yes, absolutely.
100%.
Thank you.
That was very well stated. We need her as a co-host. What's the matter here?
That's very well
stated. Oh, that was great. Oh, my. Yes.
Yeah,
reaching to the choir here. That's lovely.
I have daily frustration because I'm on a slew of platforms, you know, because I'm always having to get the news out about Imaginarium or my own writing or whatever. I mean, it's just part of life now. But yes, what Holly said, I mean, I see writers constantly, you know, just basically saying, you know, I don't read or I don't have time to read or I don't this. And it's just, it just blows me away. So thank you for making the point that you just did, because I mean, I can't tell you, you know, how many times I've, you know, I think taking strides as a writer because I have discovered, you know, a new inspiration. You know, I'll just use one just real quick, but like Paulo Coelho, you know, I don't write in magical realism, but I had, you know, I got into his work with the alchemy, you know, the alchemist and so forth and everything else that he does. And that's kind of where my journey in him began. It just opened up a whole new, you know, all kinds of new stuff for me as a, you know, even I think as a writing influence. And I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, what you learn by kind of immersing into the different voices that are out there and it does inform you and your craft. Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more. So, and you were just saying how writers were telling you they didn't have time to read or they couldn't find the time. Honestly, they cannot. Right. I mean, honestly, the correct response that I would be giving to anyone that says that is if you want to be a writer, you can't afford not to. You don't have the time. You don't have the time to not read. If you aren't going to even put words on the page, you have to read. And honestly, why is there not a nano for reading? Why are we not having National Reading Month? Where is that?
There you go.
Okay.
That's an idea.
I'm on. I think we're gonna follow up on this. That is awesome.
Are y'all still on Goodreads? I don't even know if it's a thing anymore, but I was on Goodreads and still am.
Yeah,
and
apparently it's very important.
Okay, yeah, perfect. So I'm still on it. I don't really do much on it with other interactions. I use my regular name on it because, you know, I write reviews and I'm not sure I want everyone to know that I might not have liked their book. So I will go on there, and I actually did the challenge this year, and I think I set it like at 100 books, and I hit that. I didn't think I would hit that. I didn't think I had time. Yep, there's your time. I didn't think I had time to read that many books. But as soon as I had a goal, I was like, I can't not attain that. So I'm saying we have to have a reading month. Has to be. Certain pages, numbers, or something.
I love
number
it.
Of books. I'd say
make
number of books because
that.
It doesn't even matter. Yeah, because, I mean, we're talking about reading cross-genre. Yes.
This is
cool.
Because
if we're talking about reading cross-genre, then I feel like if we have a high number of books, that will encourage people to read some of the middle school grade or like picture book to their children or some of the other things that still have a lot of value. They really do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, the guilty pleasures. Steve knows. He kind of laughs at me because he don't read young adults. But
he writes
he writes the young adult series now, and
really
phenomenal. I love it. Yes, I love it. And I'm getting ready to do book two in that series, actually edit it. But I read this series by Robert Beatty. I don't know how old your children are, but he's like mid-grade young adult. He does a series of Serafina. Look up the Serafina books, Robert Beatty. Okay. He's published by Disney. I love that guy. He's not been able to come to Imaginarium yet because he's still under Disney's thumb and has to do what they say. But there will be a day, and I will get Robert. But I'm reading his new series, Willow of the Wood. But, yeah, it's even mid-grade, young adult. I told Steve that's my guilty pleasure because he knows my norm is, like, you know, paranormal. I love Anne Rice. She's my hero. I love the vampiric books and, and all that, paranormal romance and different stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I love these series, and it's mid-grade, you know.
Yes.
That's what I said. Until you step outside your norm, your genre, you're not going to know. And
you're,
it does help you to develop as a writer. You have to step outside your box.
Absolutely.
Yep.
It's so funny you say that because I actually, the only book series that I do have that's available on Amazon is what's basically a gift book series. It's an, I call it natural inspirations. So what I wanted to do was merge like really cool, beautiful things with really poignant quotes from really important people. So one of them, you know, was, gosh, it was like coins in circles. So it was pictures of different things that made circles and then like quotes about economics. And I learned so much just by reading somebody's quote. I swear, like I had a, something, I don't remember what, I remember, gosh, which one was it? I don't remember. But one of the quotes set me off on like an entire chapter in my book. Just from what somebody said,
right.
I had never read that quote before. And so, I mean, you can even, you don't even just have to read it, just writing it down, journaling, I'm sure. I wish I was a journaler. I'm not, but I'm sure that if you are, that you could gain so much from that. And I think that there's such a lack of conversation about the need to really delve into all mediums, not just books and not just TV, but, you know, go talk to somebody, interview somebody. Like, sit down and have a chat with somebody that you don't know, and you'll walk away with, like, a wealth of knowledge. It's ridiculous.
That's so true. And that's
and
what
I'm sure y'all know that with these podcasts. Exactly. I mean, think about these podcasts that you're offering. I mean, not only are, you know, the people that are the guests are learning, and you're learning, but the listeners are learning, people that, you know, down the road that don't even know about it now that will listen to it later. It's just... It's like building a library. It's like a communal library of wealth of knowledge that's out there for everybody, especially with the internet. Like we are incredibly, incredibly lucky that we have the technology that we do have, that we can type something into a translator and get out a language that we don't know. It might not be perfect, but that's, you know, where you can go get an expert. It's, you know,
the world is smaller and smaller each day.
Absolutely.
Yep. And we learn from each other. We learn from discussions. That's what's at every single show. You learn something. We learn something. Listeners learn something. You know, we encourage, we've encouraged a lot of our guests to even be like, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. Well, you know, we'll throw ideas around, you know, and, oh, yeah, just like the NaNoWriMo, you know, we're talking about doing a mini. And all this stuff. You know, we get these ideas by talking with each other. And it is very important, even if you're a recluse and, you know, like to stay to yourself, which I understand.
Yeah.
But, no, you've got to speak to other like minds, you know?
Absolutely.
And
yeah, I'm definitely one of those extroverted introverts. Like, I am very much an introvert. Okay. Nobody knows it. Everyone thinks I'm an outgoing, extroverted person. But when I get passionate about talking about writing and talk to other people that are passionate, even if it's not about writing, just passionate about anything, I can't help but get excited. And then I want to talk to them. Okay. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, well, you know, I've got out of my shell. And I think that so many artists are locked into their shell and they don't want to talk to anybody and everyone's missing out. They're not sharing. They're not learning. You know, it's that's why I love these podcasts. I think this is so special. And I was, you know, so honored that y'all asked me to come and chat with you.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't be a stranger.
No, this has been great. I've loved a lot of the points that you've been making, and I love
and that's the
you
whole
know,
point. It's to encourage each other.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the range mm-hmm. of stuff that you do is just fantastic. And yeah, it's I do want to give you a chance to talk also about. I noticed that you also mentioned in your bio that you also are a freelancer. So I did before the show is finished. I want to give you a chance to say what you freelance in case there's something that you know listeners can possibly work with you on.
Yeah, so I started freelancing a couple years ago as a way to try to, test the waters about whether or not that this was something that I could really do and wanted to do. I homeschool my kids, so that was where my priority was. I need to do something that I can do at home. And I did write a couple of things. One thing I wrote was an article for a medical conference where it was about like health and wellness or something. I don't really remember. I put it together, gave it to them. They were super happy. So I went from that and then I moved to content creation for a company that I worked for a year where, you know, I was employed. I wrote features for them and articles for them and blogs for them. So I did that. I still do freelance occasionally. It has to be something that I'm really interested in just because I'm, like, already stretched so thin that it's hard to find the time to put in to write other people's things trying to write my own. But I absolutely still do that on occasion. For some reason, on Halloween this year, I wrote a post to Harry Dresden for his birthday. I posted it, and it got, like, all this attention, and I was like, oh, that was kind of fun. Maybe I should try to post tomorrow. And I have been on a streak since Halloween, posting, making videos. I did not intend to make videos. I was like, I cannot believe I'm making these videos. What in the heck am I doing? And off of that, I believe, is how Holly found me, if I'm correct, with one of those videos. And it's just so funny how things fall into place the way they should. And I feel like, you know, I don't know. It just feels very simpatico.
Well, I find so many individuals on LinkedIn. And that's mm-hmm. actually how I found you, was LinkedIn. Because I try to find like individuals, writers that mm-hmm. are inspiring to step outside the box. I've seen you were extremely cross-genre, that you did your thesis on Henry that they don't normally talk about, and the writing fantasy sci-fi, you know, and stepping outside that box. Oh, man, she'd be a fantastic guest. And I'd love to have you do Imaginarium. You know, you're the fresh face and the fresh, you know, voice that we need for these newer authors or even seasoned authors. Like I said, we are never a master of the craft. Mm-hmm. We learn everything. You learn something every day, and we learn from each other. You know, what don't work for one person don't work for another, but we can encourage each other. We're not competitors. We are, you know, partners, so to speak.
Yeah.
Colleagues.
We want to help
Colleagues.
Each other. You want to see yeah. another author succeed. You don't want to see them crash and burn. You want to see them succeed. You know,
absolutely,
and
or you should,
yeah,
or you
and
should,
and that's the mindset
yes.
we try to portray. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yep, yeah, it should be that kind of mentality, yeah, for sure, and yeah, I mean, it's like, because I mean, like, the thing I love about the fiction world is that I've often reflected on it, and in fiction and storytelling, you can often illustrate and explore truths about life, about, you know, philosophy, about, mm-hmm. you know, just living, timeless truths. You kind of get to step out of time and space a little bit and go on a different level and address it in a way that is even more, I think, true than often that you can address in what we call reality. So, but storytelling gives you that medium to really get at some amazing things. And so, yeah, the better that we support each other, the better our craft is. I think it actually, you know, enables something better for everybody, you know, as people, you know, through storytelling. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we're hopefully getting at here, even though sometimes it seems
I think y'all are succeeding. I absolutely feel like y'all are succeeding. And Imaginarium, I was doing research into it, and it looks just wonderful. And I'm so flattered to be a part of it. And I'm excited to come and meet y'all in person and you know, meet everybody else. And it's I'm very excited.
I think you're for a surprise on how unique it is.
Well, I can guarantee you'll never have another experience. No matter how many book signings you do or where you go, you will never have another experience like Imaginarium. We have kept it, you know, we still strive to keep it the most diverse group of creatives and individuals around writing and all of its elements, whether it's game, whether it's film, whether it's, you know, the novels, novellas, poems, you know, whatever, creatives coming together and encouraging each other. Like I said, we're not competitors. We are,
right.
You know.
Yeah, a colleague kind of thing. Right.
And that's what we try to do.
It looks
like it's going to be doing that. I'm very excited. And, you know, again, I'm very flattered that y'all would consider to, you know, letting me do it too. So.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be a phenomenal addition.
Thank you.
You sounded like you were about to ask a question, Holly. I don't know if you were.
I have one more good question before we get to all of your links and all that stuff. As a writer, what would you choose as your, like, mascot, avatar, spirit animal? As a writer, who would be your, like, mascot,
spirit
animal?
Okay. I believe, like, you know, things fall into line. This is my view. I am not even joking. Today I wrote a post about how Ray Bradbury is my writing spirit animal. I'm not even joking. Like, it's he says and puts into words this and so eloquently and so well done, and with such grace, the things that I feel like I maybe instinctively know some of them. Other things, he's like speaking to like holes in my own, you know, confidence. I think we were talking about the muse earlier, and I think every artist runs, you know, please muse, please let me just help me out this once, and I promise I won't ask you again for like at least a month, right? And you can't catch it, and it seems elusive, and Bradbury and his Zen on something writing. I wish I could think of the name of it. It is brilliant. It is insightful. And, you know, I don't necessarily love everything Bradbury writes. I would not list him as my inspiration as an author. But when it comes down to writing and learning how to write, not necessarily craft even so much, but what it means to be a writer and what it means to be a creator and how you should go about it, I've not found anybody else that I identify with more. So I have to give my props to my spirit animal, Ray Bradbury.
Very
nice.
Very awesome. Yeah, Holly, she had a much more dignified one than my latest spirit animal, Eddie Munson from Stranger Things.
I love it.
But yes, before the show runs out, though, we do want to give you a chance to give all your links and social media platform that you would like to share for our listeners to find you and continue on the journey with P.L. Riven. So yes, go
absolutely.
Ahead.
Absolutely. Yes, so I'm not sure all the handles because I know they're different. So I'll just tell you which social media platforms I'm on. I think I'm the only P.L. Riven that I've ever come across, so you should be able to find me without too much trouble. I am on Instagram. I am on LinkedIn. I am on Twitter. I am on Facebook. PLRiven.com is my official website. It has some of my old work on it, some AI art that I made for the website. It tells about me, mentions where I'm going to be up-and-coming things, so this podcast will be on there, and I get to move that over to things I've done, and Imaginarium, which I will be attending, and
yay.
Amazon. I'm sorry?
I say yay!
Yay! Yay! And then at Amazon, I have a series called The Natural Inspirations series, and it will not say P.L. Riven. It will say Margaret Ann Evans, which is the name that I publish that book series under, and it is an 8-book series. Currently, they're supposed to be processing some more. We'll see if they do it. And they are really cool. I printed some and gave them away, and people were very impressed with the quality of the art. They're all very glossy pictures and really cool inspirations. So I would suggest that you check that out. I don't really promote it because I'm really bad about promoting myself, but I do appreciate the opportunity to mention it to y'all.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great introduction to you and your work, and definitely looking forward to having you back sooner than later. But thank you for joining us tonight.
I love it. Yeah. Thank you so much for the offer, and this has been a lot of fun. It was lovely to meet
Absolutely.
Y'all remotely, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in person.
Oh,
we
definitely,
will.
Definitely.
Just a few months. It comes quick, let me tell you.
Wonderful.
Quicker, and this is our 10th anniversary, so we're
here. I know,
that's
yes.
so
exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yes, definitely check out P.L. Riven's works, her new brand new website, and connect at all of the platforms that she just mentioned. Because she has the sound of somebody that's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the literary world. I will say that
Thank
right
you
now.
So much.
what
I appreciate
a great,
that.
What a great
and
visit and vibe.
I would love to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I would love to chat with y'all anytime. You have been an absolute hoot and so insightful, and this is the kind of conversations that really gets me excited. So y'all are awesome.
You're welcome. Thank
and
you.
I appreciate it. And
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you
well, Holly,
for being our guest.
Do you want to wrap it up with the honors here, Holly?
I will do. I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. It was a wonderful discussion, lots of insight, and I sure hope it helps our listeners out there. And, get inspired. Write something every day, whether it's a paragraph, a sentence, a poem. It doesn't matter. Just write something, just get pen to paper, as we should say. Some people prefer the typing. Some people prefer the old school pen and paper. Whatever works for you is the best. So we will be back next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and have another great guest and another great discussion. See you then.